South Dakota's lone congressman, that is Congressman Dusty Johnson from the great state of South Dakota, joins us right now. Congressman, good to have you on News and Views again.
Joel, thanks for having me. If I would have known Armstrong would have been on earlier today, I would have begged for another slot.
Well, he came on yesterday, and I have to tell you, Congressman, we were pretty proud. He didn't cuss once. He didn't get ornery once. I mean, but we tried to rile him up a little bit, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, Kelly is a hardworking member of Congress, and I try to rile him up periodically, too, and sometimes it works.
Well, we were teasing each other by text later on because I just love the sparring. You know, it's done respectfully, but I just love the debate. For example, I obviously looked it up, and you did, vote to send funding to Ukraine. Why?
Well, first off, 68% of it was replenishing our own stockpiles. I mean, honestly, I think the messaging on this thing has been terrible. I mean, a lot of my colleagues, they take a tough vote, and it's like they go run and hide. I mean, hell, I don't get it. I mean, we did two things. We provided some lethal aid, bullets and missiles, to Ukraine. Overwhelmingly, even Republican primary voters are comfortable with giving missiles and bullets to an ally. The other part of what we did, the smaller part, is a loan, just like President Trump had suggested. We converted that into a loan. Ukraine is very natural resource rich. But I guess, Joel, I just put it this way. The reason so many of us were upset about the urban riots a couple of years ago, the reason that we were upset about the college campus riots now, the reason that we're upset about rising crime is that we know that a stable society is good for all of us. If my neighbor's home gets broken into, it hurts me too, eventually. And if Vladimir Putin, this evil, tyrannical thug, gets to take whatever he wants, that is bad long-term for American interests. If I got a neighbor who wants to borrow some 12-gauge to keep his home safe, count me in.
I have to ask you, because first off, everything you just said is right, okay? But I have to ask you, the majority party, which you hail from in the House, you know, there's over 100 votes here that didn't go for it, one of which was Congressman Armstrong. And so how do we use the messaging? You said the messaging is damn poor here. How do you change that narrative? Or is it people like my fault? Because the Marjorie Taylor Greens of the world are taking up all the oxygen in the room.
Well, number one, I mean, I don't get wrapped around the axle about, you know, how many votes are this way or how many votes are that way. I mean, I get it. The members of Congress care a lot about the political games. I mean, maybe I'm just too simple an animal, but I just want to go get good stuff done. And I guess I'll kind of work with anybody. If we can advance freedom, if we can reduce government, if we can help get Americans, to be more independent and less dependent, if we can keep this country, I mean, all of the stuff. I mean, I'll work with anybody to do good, and I won't work with anybody to do bad. You're right. The normals are pretty damn quiet most days. And I get it. Marjorie is a compelling speaker. I mean, why wouldn't people cover her? But I'm not going to blame you, Joel. I mean, at some point, I just don't have enough of my colleagues who are willing to face the music day in or day out. I think it's time for the normies to go get a whole lot louder. Not louder, but I think put themselves in the line of fire, just like you and I are both trying to do right now.
So I didn't have a good answer for this, Congressman. When somebody asked me, they said, why would America send aid bullets to Israel and then send, humanitarian aid to Gaza? Doesn't that seem to be a little bit of a conflict or a conflict? Not a little bit. I didn't have an answer for that.
Yeah. You didn't? I mean, come on, Joel. I think you know that. Not every single Palestinian is a member of Hamas. And so I think it's real easy for me to say a six-year-old kid who's going to die tomorrow if he doesn't get a bowl of rice, it's okay to give that kid a bowl of rice, and it's also okay to go give the Israeli Defense Forces bullets so they can go shoot terrorists. If people aren't smart enough to draw a distinction between Hamas and a six-year-old kid, I don't know what I could tell them.
I agree with that, but the problem is that six-year-old kid right now is being killed too, and I don't. That's my point in the argument.
Well, war is hell. And listen, I've never put on the uniform. I mean, I am admittedly only sharing wisdom that I have been given by my friends and family who have served. But there is no painless war. There is no costless war. If Israel has a right to defend themselves, and they do, that is going to cause real suffering. But nobody got wrapped around the axle back in, you know, after December 7th, 1941, after we were attacked by the Japanese. Nobody said to America, no, you guys just got to lay down your arms, because at some point, innocents in the Philippines and in Okinawa and in Marshall Islands, they will, you know, life is going to get tougher for them as you defend yourself. We understand that good people try to prosecute a war as fairly as they can and try to protect innocents, but that there is no perfect solution to get that done.
Okay, so how do you define a win then? When it comes to Israel, when it comes to the Palestinians, how do you define when Israel has won?
The ability of Hamas to wage existential war against Israel must be eliminated. That's the standard we used. That's the standard we used in World War II. Japan attacked us. They poked us first in a bar. Of course, we are going to finish that fight. And listen, I think a total victory has got to be the kind of standard that Israel uses. I don't get to tell them how to run their country, Joel, but that's the standard I use.
Yeah, I think you're right in saying, look, they got punched. They got a right to punch. I'm all in on that. I guess my point is, yeah, I don't know how to find out, because I don't believe that it's achievable to completely rid the Palestinians of Hamas. I don't believe that. I think that what happens in the Middle East is there is always going to be a presence there of people that, biding time, they're going to attack Israel. I believe that's always going to be there.
I mean, number one, I mean, you sort of shifted the goalposts, which I get. I mean, like, it's a fun rhetorical exercise, but I never said eliminate Hamas entirely so that there's not a single person inside Gaza that has that viewpoint. I mean, I talked about eliminating the ability, the infrastructure, the capacity of Hamas to wage existential war against Israel. That can be done. And I would tell you, this fatalism does not serve society well. People said the same thing about Ireland and Northern Ireland and the IRA. Oh, this has been going on for as long as any of us have been alive. It's hopeless. Just walk away. I mean, there have been times, even in the Middle East, and frankly, under Donald Trump, we had a pretty good run where increasingly Arab countries were recognizing Israel's right to exist. I think there is a chance for them to dismantle Hamas, and I do think there's a chance that leads to more stability long term.
Okay. Let me ask you this, though. One more question. If they release all the hostages, does that cause you to call for and expect nothing less than a ceasefire?
I mean, not a long-term ceasefire. Obviously, the hostages are supremely important. But if Hamas maintains its ability to tomorrow decide again to slaughter 3,200 innocents in Israel, I don't know how I could call on Israel to accept that.
Okay. On the home front here, a farm bill. I mean, do you realistically see a farm bill getting done in 2024?
Yes. Now, the House is way ahead of the Senate. Maybe that, I guess that probably is not surprising anybody, but I'm one of the six subcommittee chairmen that helped write the farm bill. We have text. You're going to see text in a couple weeks, Joel. We're getting real, real close. And I think 3 weeks after we release text, we'll be able to have committee action. It will come out of the committee. I believe it'll come out of the House committee on a bipartisan basis. The Senate, I don't know that they've done as much work. If they don't have their own bill released in the next couple months, we probably won't be able to get anything done before the election. Hopefully we could get it done in November or December. I just think it's kind of embarrassing. I don't want to go into the seventh year of a five-year farm bill.
So what's your goals in terms of the end product? Where's the line in the sand for you of what this new farm bill needs?
number one, we got to protect crop insurance. It's a powerful risk management tool. Number two, we need to push up input. We need to push up reference prices in the Title I programs. Obviously, we're in a drastically different input environment than we would have been 6 years ago, and I think we need to reflect that. I'm a big fan of working lands. Listen, I'm not taking shots at CRP. I understand the value that idled ground can add, but we got farmers and ranchers who know how to do conservation practices in a way that really improves soil health, water quality, improves habitat. We need to make a better investment in working lands conservation. Obviously, we still want to make sure we've got good rural development programs. I mean, North Dakota and South Dakota would not be the states they are if we didn't keep teaching, if we had not taught the city folk why a strong rural economy where people make stuff, grow stuff, build stuff, raise stuff, doesn't also help the city folk. And so these RD programs are pretty gosh darn important.
Okay, last one, I promise. Your staff has been so great to us, so I don't want to take more time than what we promised we would. But
and Joel, I love doing this more than I love doing about anything. So if you want to slip one more in under the wire, you're not going to hurt
all
my
right.
feelings.
Fix the debt. Fix it for me. How do you do it?
Well, there are only five things you can do, and the problem is the Republicans tell you that if you do one thing, it's okay. The Democrats will tell you if you do one thing, it's okay. They're just lying. Raising taxes on the rich to the highest point in the history of this country will generate you about $350 billion. That's a lot of money, Joel. But you cannot balance a $1,500 billion annual hole with $350 in new taxes. The Democrats are just selling us a bill of goods, and the Republicans make it sound like we just cut government waste. You can cut non-defense discretionary spending by 30%. And that'll generate you $300 billion a year. You can combine the liberal dream and the conservative dream. That gets you $650 billion. You're not even half the way there. So you also really need to have a conversation about long-term Medicare, Social Security. I'm not wanting to cut any benefits for anybody getting them today or anybody who's close, but I'm 47 years old. Armstrong is 47 years old. For folks who are our age or younger, we're going to live 20 years longer than our grandparents. And I'm not offended at the idea that I might have to work an extra 18 months to get an extra 18 years of retirement. Obviously, some people work a heck of a lot harder, physically damaging jobs. Let's have a conversation about how we can have some flexibility in the system for them. But we kind of have to do everything. Or at least have everything on the table to even come close.
I, as a Democrat here in North Dakota, said that, and I almost got run out the door when I stopped at the Matter VFW by somebody waiting to go on Social Security. So I get what you say. He was a bricklayer. Also understand what you say about physically when it comes to their body. I have to ask you this as well. When you were growing up, and you at some point in your life, no matter what your parents and grandparents said, you still decided one way or another you were going to be a Republican, that was your party. I have no doubt the certain decision process that you went along with to make that determination. In fact, much of it I struggled with myself, full disclosure here. But is that party that you were proud to say, Dusty Johnson is a Republican and someday he's going to be Congressman Dusty Johnson, has that party been hijacked by one man and one man alone?
I would not use the word hijack. I mean, honestly, I think Donald Trump is, I mean, there was an anger and a rage within a kind of a populist sense that things were not working before Donald Trump came into the marketplace, the political marketplace. And so, yes, he's had a big influence, but that's been there. And I would tell you, I don't love the angertainment. I don't love politicians who strut around like tough guys and howl at the moon day in and day out. And I'm not suggesting that's what Trump does. I mean, I think, honestly, the way he handled China, the way he handled the border during his first term, I mean, he had far more nuance in his views than people give him credit for. But I would say that I'm a happy warrior. I mean, I believe this is the greatest country in the world. We got real work to do, but I think we are going to be a lot more likely to get it done if we have some thoughtful, deliberative nuance in how we talk about this stuff, rather than just making people think this is only as easy as bumper sticker slogans. And so that's the part. Listen, I'm a proud Republican, but I would bring just a little bit more of the Reagan happy warrior to bear in my party right now, because I want us to be more successful.
Is Donald Trump a good person?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. Do we need to be so reductive? I mean, do we need to be black or white? I mean, I just don't know how that serves the marketplace. Does he conduct himself in a way that always, you know, has me doing cartwheels? No. But I don't know, Joel. I just feel like trying to boil that down into a one-word answer, when we're going to have to hire, Americans are going to have to hire from among two supremely imperfect human beings. I don't know. Does that really serve the public interest?
The only reason I think of it all the time is because I got six grandkids and I want the leader of the free world to be a good person. I can take tough answers from him or her, but I just want them to be somebody that a person can be proud to say was our president. But so I understand what you're getting at. It's more diverse.
Joel, I get it a bit, but you listen, if you're going to look at one side of the ledger, don't you have to also ask the question whether or not the breathtaking incompetence of our current president isn't also the kind of thing that might make your six grandkids uncomfortable?
Well, but that's where we disagree.
I mean, listen, I wish we had a perfect choice. I wish we had a perfect human being on the ballot, but that's not what we got.
But the biggest thing to me as an old Rural Water manager, you did, because of Joe Biden. You voted for the infrastructure bill. You voted for it.
I did not.
What? I was counting on you, Congressman. I was counting on you as one of the ones who did.
No, well, listen, I couldn't vote for that train wreck. It's not that I mind the investment in roads and bridges. Sign me up. The issue is we erected a fiscal cliff that in 5 years we will crash our country into a blazing inferno of a structural deficit. We paid through it through gimmicks and smoke and mirrors. We didn't go to America and say, listen, like we do every 5 or 10 years, we're going to need to find some revenues to pay for an increasing cost of infrastructure. We can have a conversation about the gas tax. We can have a conversation about EVs. We didn't do that, Joel.
I'm out of time, but I'll tell you what. I'm out of time, but I want this debate another day. You tell your staff, because I love it. Congressman, good to have you on, man. Appreciate it.
Sounds good. Thanks, Joel. Bye.
You bet.